Since prospects do things for their reasons, not yours, you must answer their most pressing question. If I give you what you want, my time, what's in it for me? If you are unable to answer WIFM with value that exceeds the cost of your prospect giving up their time, your email will not convert. This is where your research pays off. When you know a specific issue that your prospect is facing in their business, you should bridge directly to that issue and how you might be able to solve it. When you are unsure of a specific issue, bridge to issues that are common to your prospect's role, situation, or industry. Here's our buddy Brandon's attempt at bridging to my WIFM. We've been able to figure out how to maintain high quality and keep our rates competitive. It's a model that has led us to 3 straight years on the Inc. 5000. Again, so what? Everybody brags. How is this important to me? How does this add value to my unique situation? How is this relevant to me? He toots his horn, but gives me no reason to waste my time with him. Dave, on the other hand, ties his subject line, opening sentence, and relate statement together with a bridge that connects the dots between Lawrence's perceived issue, stress, and solutions that reduce stress. He answers Lawrence's WIFM question. Most importantly, he speaks Lawrence's language, the language of COOs, growth, profit, risk, allocated resources, and minimized surprises. By speaking Lawrence's language, he continues to relate and demonstrate that he gets him and his problems. My team and I help COOs like you reduce complexity and stress with strategies to optimize growth and profit, mitigate credit risk, allocate resources effectively, and minimize regulatory surprises. Ask. To get what you want, ask for what you want, and make it easy for your prospect to act. Once again, here's our buddy Brandon. I'd love to schedule a time to connect and outline how we're able to do this while discussing any projects or plans you might have. Just let me know a time that works with your schedule for a free consultation and quote. Brandon does the expected. He says what he would love to do. I'd love to schedule a time to connect and outline how we're able to do this. Well, here's what I hear Brandon saying. I would love to hear the sound of my own voice as I pitch you on all of our wonderful features and tell you how great we are. And by the way, good news, it's free. Then he puts the burden on me to find time on my schedule and get back to him. So how does making it hard on me make any sense? And even if I wanted to meet with him, I'd probably save this until later because I would not have time at the moment to go through my calendar and find time for some sales guy, which effectively means I would never get to it. Here's how Dave asks. While I don't know if we are a good fit for your bank, why don't we schedule a short call to help me learn more about your unique challenges? From there, we can decide if it makes sense to set up a deeper conversation. How about next Thursday at 3 p.m.? Dave starts off by disrupting expectations. He tells Lawrence up front that it might not be a good fit for his bank. That is exactly the opposite of what Lawrence would expect from a salesperson. Unlike pitching that pushes prospects away, disrupting expectations pulls prospects towards you. Then Dave continues and sends a subtle but powerful message. He says he wants to learn, read, listen. This pulls Lawrence in deeper because everyone wants to be heard. We love to tell our story to people who are willing to listen. Dave caps things off with the phrase, your unique challenges. This makes Lawrence feel important because everyone believes that their situation is unique. Finally, Dave takes away the pressure by implying that the call will be short and lowers risk by saying, if it doesn't make sense, I'm not going to push things. Then he assumptively asks for a meeting and offers a day and time, which takes the burden off of Lawrence to make that decision. Practice, practice, practice. The truth is, writing effective prospecting email messages is not easy. the most difficult step is training yourself to stop thinking about your product or service and instead stepping into your prospect's shoes, relating to their situation, and learning to speak their language. Develop the habit of researching prospects and becoming aware of trigger events that are impacting them and opening up buying windows. You will struggle at first. Everybody does. The key is practicing until effective, authentic emails roll off your fingertips. The more you practice, the faster and more proficient you will become at writing prospecting emails that convert. The best time to send emails. The million-dollar question with prospecting emails is, when is the best time to send them? And like telephone prospecting, the verdict on this is all over the board. Some experts say in the morning, some say at night, and others say on Tuesday afternoons at 3:12 p.m. on leap years. And it's all mostly noise. So here's a blinding flash of the obvious. The best time to send a sales prospecting email is when your prospect is most likely to open it and take action. For most B2B salespeople, this will be first thing in the morning because that's when your prospects are fresh and usually handling email. For B2C sales, you may need to adjust your timing to capture your prospect's attention when they are most likely to take immediate action. It's easy to test timing with email intelligence tools, and the good news is you can write emails anytime, preferably outside of the golden hours, and schedule them to be sent at a time of your choosing. Pause before you press send. I'm the typo king, and I'm quite sure you may have found a few of my mistakes while reading this book. So I end this chapter with humble advice from a man who has made the terrible mistake of not pausing before pushing send and launching a typo, spelling, and grammatical error-laden email to a prospect. It is a lesson you want to avoid learning the hard way. Proof your prospecting email before you send it. Read it once, read it twice. Step away from it for 10 minutes and read it again. Trust me, you'll be amazed at what you catch using this process. And I recommend that you print the really important emails and proof the hard copy. Your email is a reflection of you, your professionalism, and your personal brand. Pause before you push send to ensure that the impression you make is positive. Chapter 20. Text messaging. Sometimes I text the wrong person, on purpose, just to start a conversation. Frank Warren. Here's a fun game to play at your next gathering of friends and family. Ask them how they feel about salespeople using text messages for prospecting. Then sit back and watch the fireworks. You'll likely start a heated argument. My wife, for example, upon learning that I was writing a chapter on text message prospecting, said in a holier-than-thou tone, "I can't believe you are teaching salespeople to do that. You are pure evil." That sentiment correlates to the reception I get when opening up discussions on texting as a prospecting tool. It's the third rail of sales prospecting and a concept that I approach lightly. The mere mentioning of text as a prospecting tool causes negative reactions from, "I don't think that will work for our prospect base," to pure revulsion. I get it because it makes sense. We can all relate. We don't want our text message inbox to be filled with texts from salespeople either. This is due to a weird irony. Text messaging as a communication channel is impersonal because it lacks the emotional connectivity of face-to-face and verbal communication, yet it feels extremely personal. Text has become the go-to medium for communication with family, friends, and coworkers, and a haven on our phones that is typically not touched by spam or outside influence. The people we text with are most often people we know, even when it's business. This is one of the key reasons that a study commissioned by Velocify concluded, for the same reasons that text messages can be a more effective way to communicate with sales prospects, they also have the potential to be interpreted as intrusive or in violation of one's personal domain when used for business purposes. The fact that texting is so personal makes it an extremely powerful channel for getting the attention of prospects. Because it is so personal, though, timing and technique become more important than any other prospecting channel. Texting as a business tool is accelerating. What makes text messaging an increasingly valuable prospecting channel is the inevitable and total integration of mobile phones as the primary communication device in our lives. My entire staff at SalesGravy is connected to a voice-over internet protocol hub that distributes our calls to our mobile devices no matter where we are in the world. There are no traditional handsets at our desks. The voice-over internet protocol system also integrates with our CRM and allows us to easily send and receive text messages to and from our prospects via desktop and mobile apps. We are not alone. Small and mid-sized businesses across the globe are adopting these systems because they are inexpensive and make it easy to integrate all forms of communication in one cloud-based communication center. Large companies are also jumping onto the bandwagon, moving towards desktop and app-based phone systems that make it easier to use text as an integrated part of a complete communication system. And bring your own device programs also allow employees to use their personal phones for business calls, email, and text messages. Familiarity is everything with text. We talk to strangers on the phone, email strangers, and meet strangers in person, but we rarely text strangers. This is why, more than with any other prospecting channel, familiarity is critical for prospecting via text. The probability of your text message converting, compelling your prospect to take action, increases exponentially if your text comes after contact through another channel. This is not to say that you shouldn't take a gambit on a text message to a hard-to-reach prospect when all other means have been exhausted and the buying window is rapidly closing. When you have nothing to lose, the chance of causing offense is worth the risk. However, using text messaging in these circumstances or when the person does not know you is a very low probability play. One of the key reasons why text messages work is that most people feel compelled to read and respond to them immediately. This is why familiarity plays an important role in getting prospects to respond to your text messages and, of course, not report you as spam. Text messaging works best as an integrated part of a larger prospecting system and strategy rather than a standalone channel. According to the Velocify study that covered 3.5 million lead records from more than 400 companies, a text message sent alone converts at 4.8%. That same message sent after a phone contact increases conversion by 112.6%. Why? The law of familiarity. You can amplify that impact even further when your text message follows an email contact or social media interaction, and you gain even more traction when you text following a positive in-person networking interaction. The better the prospect knows you, the more effective your prospecting text message will be. The less they know you, the more likely you will be seen as annoying spam. People are averse to getting random text messages from people they don't know, especially salespeople. Use text to anchor conversations at networking events. Text messages are excellent vehicles for setting appointments following face-to-face interactions at networking events, trade shows, conferences, and other situations where you've had a positive encounter with a potential customer. Many of those encounters end with a vague promise to get together sometime in the future. Yet, most of those promises are never fulfilled because you get busy and fail to send an email or make a phone call, or your prospect gets busy and ignores your emails and phone calls, or your emails get missed among the clutter in their inbox. Text messaging is a much easier, faster way to get through the noise, get their attention, and set a meeting. Since almost everyone includes a mobile phone number on business cards these days, it's easier than ever to text a quick follow-up thank you message and ask for the next step. Here's what you do. During your conversation, when the vague statement is made to meet sometime in the future, casually say, "Sounds good. I'll text you and we can get together." As soon as you walk away from the conversation, send a personalized connection request on LinkedIn. This further anchors your name so they'll remember you. Within 24 hours of the event, Give it a couple of days if travel is involved. Send a text message thanking them for the conversation and request a meeting. Personalize it with information you gleaned in your conversation. Your text message might sound something like this. From Jeb Blunt, Sales Gravy. Awesome to meet you. Have fun with your son at the Cavs game this weekend. Looking forward to learning more about you and your business. How about getting together next Thursday? Will 2 p.m. Eastern time work for you? If you don't get a response, try sending your text again a day later. In many cases, they will not recognize your phone number and will ignore your initial attempt. They may also be busy or traveling and might not get it. If your second attempt fails, shift to the phone and email to make contact. It serves no purpose to potentially create ill will by continuing to text. And always send a handwritten note within a week of the event via snail mail. This will really make you stand out from the crowd. Use text following trigger events. A trigger event is a disruption in the status quo that may compel your prospect to act. For example, a move by your prospect's competitor that threatens their competitive edge might compel them to accelerate their investment in marketing automation. When you become aware of a trigger event, it creates an opportunity to reach out to your prospect via text messaging. Text messaging works with trigger events because trigger events create urgency to act and text messages are perceived as more urgent. Be warned though, the law of familiarity is at play in a big way with trigger event text messages. Make sure the prospect knows who you are before sending this type of message. I've found a soft approach with trigger events works best. It requires a bit of patience and creativity. The key is becoming a resource by adding value and leveraging that into a deeper conversation. When I have a relationship with a prospect or at least a level of familiarity, I'll simply text over a link to an article or resource relevant to their situation. That usually turns into a phone call where I can engage them in a conversation. If I know them well and I can't find anything relevant to send them, I'll just send a text message that references the trigger event and ask how things are going. A response creates a path to a deeper conversation. Here's an example. From Jeb Blunt, Sales Gravy. Patricia, saw the announcement that Halcon is merging with Remco. Sure things are buzzing over there. Here's an article I thought you might find helpful. Let's catch up when you get a moment. Use text to nurture prospects. Text messaging can play an integral role in nurturing prospects with whom you have a relationship but are not yet in the buying window. A quick value-added text message is an easy way to remain top of mind without seeming too intrusive. For example, Matt, who sells a cloud-based business intelligence program, has done an outstanding job of using text messaging to nurture his relationship with me. Matt first contacted me 9 months ago. We spoke for a few minutes. He believed his program could help my company optimize our marketing channels and improve the ROI of our advertising spend. He did a really nice job of connecting with me on that initial call, so I agreed to a demo. The demo was impressive, and I liked the system Matt and his team showed me, but two factors stopped me from buying. First, to integrate his platform with our marketing automation system would take 100 or so man hours and a ton of work to calibrate. I've been around the block enough times to know that despite the promises of seamless integration from Matt's team, nothing ever goes smoothly. We were already knee-deep in a major upgrade of our job board technology, and I could not fathom taking on another project. Second was the cost. Moving to Matt's system required a significant upfront investment that would have to be recouped over time through savings from the automation and additional lead gen. That promise of ROI sometime in the future was difficult to wrap my head around because of the investment we were already making in the job board upgrade. Honestly, I was completely overwhelmed, and like so many of your prospects, the status quo was a more comfortable place than change. So I told Matt that although I thought his software was fantastic, I would not be buying a system. This didn't mean that I would never be a buyer, just not now. Matt was smart enough to realize that I was a qualified prospect because I had a need for his software and the means to purchase it. However, I had no urgency to pull the trigger. So he began systematically nurturing the relationship using four prospecting channels: phone, email, social, and text. He calls me once a quarter to find out where I am with other projects and to test my engagement. He supplements those calls with monthly emails and text messages with links to studies, white papers, and news about the upgrades to his system he feels are relevant to me. He also follows me on Twitter and retweets or favorites my posts. Matt's strategy has been brilliant. He reserves his best value-added information for text messages. Because he is familiar with my interest and my company, he often texts links to relevant articles that he knows I will want to read. Most of these have nothing to do with his product, but they add value to me. When I get these text messages, I always text back, "Thank you." That usually creates a short dialogue on some area of interest, usually sports, which in turn keeps us connected. Every once in a while, he'll send a text to tell me that he enjoyed reading one of my articles or listening to a podcast. Matt's strategy keeps me engaged and nurtures our relationship. His text messages are appreciated and non-intrusive because they are valuable to me and personal. Because of this, Matt and his company stay on my mind, as evidenced by this story. And when I do make a buying decision on BI software, I'll be buying it from Matt. Use text to create opportunities for engagement. Text messages are also well received when they make your prospect feel important. Short text messages to congratulate them on a promotion, a mention in the news, an award or recognition, or to say something nice about an article they wrote, video they produced, or something they posted on social media that caught your eye, get your prospect's attention. This can be especially powerful if you like, comment on, or share the post as well. Engagement text messages usually get a positive response as long as they are sincere, personalized, and free of direct solicitations for anything. The goal is simple. Give your prospect a reason to engage you in a conversation, and you increase this possibility by making them feel important. 7 rules for structuring effective text prospecting messages. For your text message to be effective, you need to engage your prospect and get them to take action in a blink of an eye. Packing your message into a small space requires you to be thoughtful, creative, and focused, because it's difficult to make an impact in 250 characters or less. There are 7 rules for effective text messages. Rule 1. Identify yourself. Never take for granted that your prospect has your information saved on their phone. In most cases, they don't, and when you send a text message, they won't know who you are. As a best practice, include your name and company at the top of the message. Rule number 2. Message matters. What you say and how you say it carries impact. Be very careful that your tone is not misinterpreted in a negative way. Use complete sentences to avoid sounding abrupt, harsh, sarcastic, or flippant. Rule number 3. Be direct, be brief. Say exactly what you mean in clear, precise, well-written sentences using good grammar and spelling. Remember that this is a professional message. Keep the text to 1 to 4 short sentences or less than 250 characters when possible. Avoid rambling, run-on sentences. And do not use emoticons, those little smiley faces. Be professional. Rule number 4. Avoid abbreviations. Avoid using abbreviations on text messages to prospects. Abbreviations like LOL, OMG, WTF, and others don't come off as professional, and the person on the other end might not understand what you mean. And likewise, you should avoid using acronyms and slang. Rule number 5. Use transparent links. People are extremely suspicious of shortened hyperlinks. Just like with email, when you send URLs to prospects that link to articles or other resources, send the entire URL so they know where they're clicking. Rule number 6. Before clicking send, pause and read it again. Make this your rule when it comes to text messages and, frankly, all written communication. And rule number 7. Know your numbers. Finally, as with all prospecting channels, know your numbers. Track the number of texts that you send each day, response rates, and conversions into appointments and ultimately sales. And one final message. Do not text while driving. Put the smartphone down. Chapter 21. Developing Mental Toughness. When the going gets tough, the mentally tough keep going. This is the brutal, undeniable truth. Sales is a tough, grueling, and sometimes heartbreaking profession. The pressure to deliver and the demand to perform in sales is unrelenting. You must deliver results or you will be fired. In the sales profession, it's not about what you have sold, it's about what you sell today. Fanatical prospectors receive more rejection before 9 a.m. than the average person gets in an entire year. The fact is, most people wouldn't last a minute in sales. They are so afraid of rejection that they'd rather starve to death than make a single prospecting call. This is why salespeople are the elite athletes of the business world. The employees of your company, even if they don't act like it, understand this. They count on you for their jobs and their paychecks. The owners and executives need you to make your numbers to keep the shareholders happy. Simply put, no salespeople, no elite athletes, no customers, no profit, no growth, no company, no team. If your company were a professional sports team, the salespeople would be on the field playing the game, and everyone else would be on the sideline supporting you. I want you to stop for a moment and look at yourself in the mirror. See yourself for who you really are, an elite athlete. Just like a professional sports team counts on its players to deliver in the game, your company counts on its elite athletes, you, to deliver in the marketplace. When the whistle blows each morning, you've got to be ready to rock. Like top athletes, you must train hard to deliver peak performance. What research tells us, though, is that it takes more than training and conditioning to remain at peak performance day in and day out. All elite athletes, in sports and business, train hard and work hard. That's a given. Champions, however, gain their competitive edge from mental toughness. Data from multiple research studies tells us that mental toughness is more important than talent, experience, education, skills, or technique. Mental toughness is why some athletes thrive under pressure while others disintegrate. It is so important that at Sales Gravy, we help our clients hire better salespeople with our sales drive assessment that tests exclusively for mental toughness. Mental toughness, sometimes called grit, is the real reason some salespeople are perennial superstars while others with the same level of talent fold up like a cheap lawn chair as soon as things get difficult. James Lohr was one of the first experts to identify the psychology of winning. He described 7 core dimensions of mental toughness: self-confidence, attention control, minimizing negative energy, increasing positive energy, maintaining motivational levels, attitude control, and visual and imagery control. More recently, groundbreaking studies like Angela Duckworth's study, Grit, Perseverance and Passion for Long-Term Goals, are helping us understand just how much mental toughness matters in achievement. This is why, to reach the top of your game, you must develop grit. The good news is, unlike talent and intelligence that are baked into your DNA, mental toughness can be learned and developed. The formula is simple. Change your mindset, change your game. It takes grit. You have to grind to shine. In sales, you can only control 3 things: your actions, your reactions, and your mindset. Losing is a choice. Mediocrity is a choice. Yes, I've heard the argument, salespeople are born, not made. I certainly believe that some people are born with the talent to be accountants, NFL quarterbacks, leaders, and sales professionals. However, thousands upon thousands of salespeople wash out because they make the choice, yes, the choice, to lose. When you choose mediocre behaviors, you get mediocre results. And once you allow mediocrity into your sales day, you become a bad luck magnet. This choice is one of the key reasons so many salespeople find themselves job hopping. Despite the training each new company provides, despite the coaching, despite the mentoring, despite the tools, eventually these salespeople wash out. They have everything they need to succeed except mental toughness. Last year, we hired a sales rep to sell advertising for Sales Gravy. We gave her training, guidance, support, and leads. When she started, I had a heart-to-heart conversation with her. I explained that her first 60 days would be the hardest she would face. She would have to work hard to build her pipeline. Along the way, she'd get lots of rejection, make mistakes, and become embarrassed from time to time as she learned to present a new, unfamiliar product. Our new rep worked hard for exactly 29 days. Then I got the call. She was quitting. There were lots of excuses. The job was overwhelming. She didn't feel like she was having success. Maybe advertising sales wasn't the best fit. I explained again that these feelings were to be expected with something new, and if she just stuck with it for a little while longer, her efforts would pay off. But her mind was already made up, and she quit. We jumped on the phone and followed up with all the prospects she'd put into her pipeline. She'd done a great job in her first 29 days of getting qualified prospects into the pipe. So good, in fact, that we closed almost all the opportunities she had developed. Her commission on these sales would have been $7,000. Instead, she received zero. Quitting is a choice. Most people, when faced with challenges, quit too soon. Far too often, right as they are on the cusp of success. This is especially true with salespeople in new sales jobs. Starting a new sales job and taking on new challenges is frustratingly hard. There are many dark days when you feel like all you do is fail and there is no hope. And as you get closer to breaking through, things actually seem bleaker. You are tired, beat up, and worn down. It is at this point that mental toughness in the form of faith and persistence takes you the last mile. Winston Churchill said that when you are going through hell, keep going. Faith is crucial. Faith that by doing the right things every day, the cumulative impact of these actions will pay off. Faith keeps you focused on your goal when no tangible evidence exists that the hard work that you are doing gets you there. Persistence is the fuel of winners. It is the tenacity and the determination to keep going in spite of self-doubt, roadblocks, failure, embarrassment, and setbacks. Persistence picks you up off the ground, dusts you off, and sends you back in the game. Persistence gives you that last final push across the finish line. The fact is, sales is a grind. Prospecting is a grind. But you've got to grind to shine. Everybody wants the glory of the close. But most people are unwilling to grind, unwilling to pay the price for success. In any endeavor, success is paid for in advance with hard work. And in sales, success is paid for in advance with prospecting. You will never excel at anything if you don't put the hard work in first. Mental toughness is the one trait that defines all top performers. Mental toughness is the ability to get back up when you've been knocked down and be resilient in the face of rejection, adversity, and failure. It is the ability to accept pain and sacrifice today for a win in the future. It is the ability to block out negative self-talk, manage disruptive emotions, ignore people who tell you what you can't do, and put a singular focus on a desired goal. This grit is the foundation of faith, persistence, tenacity, resilience, hustle, and a winning mindset. The top people in business, sports, sales, and every other walk of life hit the same walls and face the same mental and physical suffering as everyone else. What makes them different is their ability to lean into their challenges and disrupt the desire to quit. Mental toughness cuts through any delusion that things will be easy. It embraces the suck, and in the case of sales, what sucks is prospecting, and it keeps on grinding. In their book, Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again, Dr. Chris Kroner and Richard Abraham describe mental toughness in salespeople using three dimensions. The first is optimism. When you get knocked down, optimism tells you that if you can look up, you can get up. Optimism is the mother of perseverance. It powers a positive belief system and it attracts positive energy. Next is competitiveness. Do you hate to lose or do you love to win? The drive to avoid losing is what keeps superstars working longer, harder, and doing whatever it takes to win. Competitiveness is the mother of persistence. And finally, the need for achievement. Psychologist and researcher Henry Murray defined the need for achievement as intense, prolonged, and repeated efforts to accomplish something difficult, to work with singleness of purpose towards a high and distant goal, to have the determination to win. The need for achievement is the mother of self-motivation. Four pillars of mental toughness in sales. What does it take to develop and maintain mental toughness in sales? How do you incubate optimism, competitiveness, and the need for achievement? What steps can you take starting today to reach peak performance and become an elite sales athlete? Over the course of my career, while working with thousands of superstar sales professionals, I've discovered that there are four pillars that make up the foundation of mental toughness in sales. Desire. The great Napoleon Hill said that desire is the starting point of all achievement. Not a hope, not a wish, but a keen, pulsating desire which transcends everything. Likewise, my good friend Brian Stanton says, desire is the mother of sales activity. Desire is the singularity of achievement. Anything truly worth achieving must begin with desire. Otherwise, you will fail. It's the key to tapping into the motivation you need to get past real and self-inflicted performance roadblocks. It's just easier to develop mental toughness and self-discipline when you have a goal. For example, if you desire more than anything to buy a house, but you need a down payment, then you'll do whatever it takes to earn bigger commission checks. If you desire to go on your company's elite sales trip, you will find the will to wake up early every morning and hit the phones. If you desire to be promoted to sales manager, you'll find a way to excel as a sales rep so you stand out. Desire, though, is just the beginning. It's a spark. To ignite, you need a clear definition of what you want and where you are going. This requires you to answer three questions. What do you want? How do you plan to get what you want? And how bad do you want it? That's it. Begin with defining what you want, building a plan, and writing it down. Not empty promises, not fleeting wishes or vague hopes. Real goals that mean something for your career and life. Here is the brutal reality. If you don't have a plan, you will become part of someone else's plan. You can either take control of your life or someone else will use you to enhance theirs. It's your choice. So start here. Define what you want and write it down. This means gathering up the discipline to stop what you are doing, sit down, and actually think about your future. Writing down your goals and plan makes you unstoppable. When you write down your goals, ink on paper, you tap into a powerful motivational force. A written plan forces action. Something inside of you begins to drive you forward, pushing you towards your destination. It is there, written in stone, and it cannot be ignored until it has been accomplished. Prospecting creates adversity. There will be hurdles, roadblocks, disappointment, and loads of rejection. There will always be a mountain you'll have to climb and an uphill battle you'll have to fight. There will always be a temptation to slack off. There will always be an excuse for why you can't do something. There will always be something more pleasurable in the short term than sacrificing in the long term for what you really want. This is why tapping into desire is so powerful. A set of written goals with clear steps to success leads to action. Action creates forward momentum. As momentum shifts you into overdrive, you'll hurdle past and skip over the quicksand of procrastination, perfectionism, and paralysis. To help you design your goals, I've developed a goal planning workbook that can be downloaded free at freegoalsheet.com. That's freegoalsheet.com. Mental resilience. A few years ago, during a storm, a large tree fell in my backyard. It left a huge mess. But I was thrilled because this was my chance. I'd wanted to purchase a chainsaw for years, probably some man-machine thing in my DNA. Thing is, I've never had much to cut up. At the time, I lived in the city and my fireplaces were all natural gas. But with my entire backyard covered in fallen tree, somebody had to take care of the problem. I ignored the rational pleas from my wife to just hire someone to remove it and marched right down to the hardware store and bought a new chainsaw and all of the accessories. urban warrior personified. Gloves, check. Safety glasses, check. Chain oil, check. Fuel, check. Brand new leather tool belt just so I'd look badass, check. And 14-year-old son to haul the branches I cut to the curb, check. I pulled the cord several times to crank the machine, and finally it fired up. The engine rumbled. It felt awesome in my hands. Power. I hit the throttle several times more just to let the tree know who was boss, and then got down to work. The smell of burning fuel filled the air. Sawdust was flying, and defeated branches crashed to the ground. I worked through the tangle of limbs, taking small branches off first. The new saw cut through the wood like a hot knife through butter. Man versus tree, and man was winning. An hour later, though, the tree was getting the best of me. Drenched in sweat, I struggled for what seemed like hours just to make a single cut through the trunk. Looking at what remained of the tree and doing the math in my head, at the pace I was going, it would take days to finish the job. Exhausted and frustrated, I turned the saw off and sat down on my back steps to rest, ignoring the "I told you so" look I got from my wife as she handed me a glass of iced tea. My son, who'd been doing the same calculation and realizing that at this pace he would never get back to his video game, said, "Daddy, maybe you need to sharpen the saw." I shook my head no and explained to him, "It's brand new. It should be plenty sharp. I think the wood in the trunk is just harder than the limbs." I didn't say it out loud, but I really didn't want to go through the hassle of driving to the hardware store to get a saw sharpener. An hour later, again exhausted and getting nowhere, I reluctantly took his advice and drove to the hardware store. After 15 minutes of sharpening, the saw was once again going through the wood like it was butter. I shook my head in disbelief. If I'd taken the time to just sharpen the saw when it started bogging down, I would already be finished with the job. This got me thinking about other areas of my life where I was bogging down and getting nowhere. Honestly, there were dozens of opportunities to sharpen up. I realized that with all of my focus on building my business, I ignored investing in myself. With my chainsaw lesson firmly in mind, I registered for a seminar, ordered a book, and subscribed to several blogs focused on the areas in my life that needed some sharpening. The techniques I learned made an immediate impact on my mindset. I felt more energized and focused, and my drive increased exponentially. Over the next few months, my already successful business doubled in size. We even had to open a new office to make room for our growing team. It was a direct result and an investment in me. So how about you? Where are you bogging down or expending lots of effort but getting nowhere? When was the last time you sharpened your own saw? When was the last time you slowed down and invested in yourself? The most successful people are constantly investing in themselves to increase their knowledge, gain insight, and sharpen their skills. They understand a principle that was true with my chainsaw and true in life. Sometimes you need to slow down to speed up. It's not always about trying harder. Sometimes it's about doing or thinking differently. And though in the heat of the moment, you may feel that you don't have time to read a book or attend a seminar or run into a hardware store to purchase a sharpener, more often than not, slowing down and sharpening your saw will actually help you move faster with less effort and generate far better results. Outlearn equals out-earn. Cicero said, "The cultivation of the mind is as necessary as food to the body." Gandhi said, "We should live as if we will die tomorrow and learn as if we will live forever." In sales and in life, when you outlearn your competitors and your peers, you will outearn them. People who invest in learning are more motivated, develop a stronger belief system, and are invariably more successful than their peers. Want to become an elite sales athlete? Well, one of the keys is to have more knowledge about the sales profession, your industry, and your products and services than any of your competitors. Learners invest their own money in books, seminars, and workshops to keep their skills updated and sharp. They subscribe to newsletters, trade magazines, industry publications, blogs, and sales publications to stay current on their own industry and the sales profession. They follow top experts on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. They listen to podcasts, show up for webinars, and watch educational videos online. And they read books. Everything you ever need to know about anything is contained in a book. Everything. If you want to learn something or become an expert at anything, all you need to do is read. Yet, I'm saddened at how many people tell me that they don't like to or just plain won't read. I've got limited patience for salespeople who don't read. There is absolutely no excuse for it. When you decide not to read, you are making the conscious choice to limit your growth and income, and I have zero sympathy for you. Reading helps you think more thoroughly. It helps you see the world differently. It makes you a better resource to your customers and company. It helps you become a better conversationalist. Reading gives you insight, improves your writing skills and vocabulary. And because so few people read, reading can help you become an expert whom people who don't read seek out for advice. And reading programs the subconscious mind to find answers when you need them. There has never been a time in human experience where books were more accessible or affordable. With mobile devices, you can read anywhere. I'm a big fan of Kindle and Audible, and you'll also find dozens of outlets including iBooks, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon to buy books. I buy hardcover, digital, and audiobooks. With just a click of my smartphone, I have access to millions of books in an instant. With Audible, I'm able to plug my phone or tablet into my car and listen to books while I drive or while I walk my dog or work out at the gym. The real secret is breaking reading up into small chunks of just 15 minutes a day. 15 minutes a day of professional reading adds up fast, and most people are shocked at how many books they go through. Here's how it works. There are 52 weeks in a year. Let's assume that you get in professional reading, that's nonfiction reading, only on weekdays, and that you take 2 weeks off for vacation. That leaves you with 250 days for professional reading. That 250 days multiplied by 15 minutes gives you 3,750 minutes, or roughly 62.5 hours, of professional reading in a year. The average business, sales, or personal development book requires between 2 and 3 hours to read, depending on your speed. That's around 250 pages or 50,000 words, with the average adult reading between 300 and 500 words per minute. Do the math. 62.5 hours divided by 3 hours per book, and over the course of the year, reading just 15 minutes a day, you will read approximately 21 professional books. This is an astounding number of books. Reading just 15 minutes a day will change your life and your income. On your lunch break, when you're waiting for a customer on a train or a plane, or when you have a moment to spare, just pull up your reading app on your phone and knock out a few pages. Use drive time wisely. The average inside salesperson has a commute of 1 to 2 hours a day. The average outside sales rep spends between 4 and 5 hours a day in a car. Why not spend it learning rather than listening to music or talk radio? The late Zig Ziglar called this automobile university. Listening to educational and personal development audio programs in your car can give you the equivalent of a university education many times over. It's easy. Add the Audible app on your phone and download audiobooks. Add the podcast app on Apple or the Stitcher app on Android on your phone and listen to podcasts. I'm a huge fan of podcasts because they are F-R-E-E, free. Many of the world's preeminent thought leaders and authors produce incredible podcasts that help you grow and develop. And be sure to subscribe to my podcast, the most downloaded sales podcast in iTunes history, while you're out there. For salespeople, the key to building mental resilience is using every spare moment to invest in yourself. Physical resilience. In sales, the mental discipline to put yourself out there and be vulnerable to rejection requires a tremendous amount of mental energy. Your mental energy will always be limited by your physical resilience. You won't win consistently if you lack the endurance to outwork and out-hustle your competitors. Keeping yourself in great physical condition improves creative thinking, mental clarity, and optimism. It makes you more nimble and adaptive, and helps you gain the discipline to maintain emotional self-control in the face of endless rejection. It also boosts your confidence and enthusiasm, the two most important emotions in sales. Physical resilience is built on three foundational pillars. Pillar 1, regular exercise. Sales professionals spend an inordinate amount of time sitting and staring at screens. With the increase in inside sales roles and the advancement of technology like video calls, email, and social media, salespeople spend less time on their feet than ever before. There is mounting evidence that sitting all day is extremely hazardous to your health and impacts your mental capacity. It turns out when you sit too long staring at a computer screen, everything slows, including brain function. Reams of research indicate that 30 minutes to an hour a day of exercise keeps you healthy, reduces the chance of disease, and develops physical resilience. Most people can find 30 minutes a day to exercise. You've just got to commit and sometimes get creative. Maybe you don't have time for 30 minutes all at one time. That's okay. Studies also indicate that 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there can be just or even more effective than a single long session. You can go to the gym, take a walk at lunch, or ride your bike when you get home at night. Supplement this with 50 sit-ups and 50 push-ups, and on the weekends, play sports or go for a hike. Carry your bag on the golf course instead of riding in a cart. Park at the back of the parking lot. Walk the stairs. Walk to the next terminal at the airport rather than riding the train. Work in your garden. Stand up while you're making prospecting calls, and walk on your breaks or between meetings rather than sitting in the break room or in a conference room gossiping. There are literally hundreds of ways to build a 30-minute-a-day workout routine in your busy life. It doesn't matter what you do. It just matters that you do something that makes you sweat for at least 30 minutes every day. Pillar 2, sleep. Nothing impacts your health and mental well-being more than sleep. When you get plenty of sleep, your physical and mental energy is at peak state. You are more creative, more disciplined, and more agile. You are more confident, can think on your feet, and are more apt to push past adversity and, frankly, look and feel better. Humans need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep every night for optimal performance. In today's society, though, it has become a badge of honor to live on little sleep. All sorts of ugly things happen to you when you are not getting enough sleep. Over the long term, you become more susceptible to immune deficiencies, obesity, heart disease, and mood disorders, and it reduces your life expectancy. In the short term, sleep deprivation has a profound impact on your cognitive ability. You're grumpy, mentally unfocused, and stressed out. Your memory fails you, and you become susceptible to breaks in discipline. It is very, very difficult to maintain the mental toughness required for prospecting when you're not getting enough sleep. Pillar 3, eat healthy. In the hectic, fast-paced world of sales, it can be difficult to eat well. Field salespeople swing into fast food joints to fuel up, and inside salespeople reach for the bag of chips or candy bar hidden in their desk drawer and wash it all down with sugar-laden sodas and energy drinks. Eating poorly is like putting low-grade gasoline in a high-performance race car. To gain the mental toughness and resiliency to work at your peak throughout the sales day, you need to fill up with high-test rocket fuel. Healthy eating is a conscious choice. It is a commitment that is easy to break when you're not getting enough sleep or exercise. The good news these days is even fast food restaurants have healthy choices. With just a little discipline and planning, you can easily find nutritious food on the road, and you can certainly prepare healthy meals at home. There is one cardinal rule for salespeople and food. No matter what, eat breakfast. Breakfast is the most important meal of the sales day. It kickstarts your metabolism, energizes your attitude, and helps you muster the discipline to start your day with a high-energy prospecting block. Feed your attitude. You are what you believe, and your beliefs either attract success or push it away. Your beliefs drive your attitude, and when it comes to prospecting and sales, attitude is everything. When you feed your attitude, the fear and reluctance associated with prospecting starve to death. Therefore, an investment in a strong belief system is foundational to mental toughness. In my travels around the world, I've discovered that people with a positive attitude share two common beliefs. They expect to win, and they believe that everything happens for a reason. When you internalize an expectation that you are going to win and are supposed to win, you'll win far more often than the person who expects to lose. You'll ask confidently for what you want, achieve your prospecting objectives more often, and close more deals. When you believe that everything happens for a reason, your perspective on potentially negative events will be optimistic. Instead of complaining, "Why me?" when you face a setback, you ask, "How can I learn from this?" In other words, when you choose to believe that you are in control of your own destiny, you no longer fear failure and rejection because you believe that failure is the path to learning, growth, and improved performance. Because you are human, your beliefs will tend to wax and wane. Sometimes you'll get caught up in stinking thinking without even realizing it. Other people may even see it in you and tell you that you need an attitude adjustment. The most obvious place a deteriorating mindset shows up is in your sales performance. When your attitude loses altitude, you lose your winning edge. The key to keeping your attitude tuned into the right channel is self-awareness. When you start to feel uncentered, your language turns negative, or other people start pointing out that your attitude sucks, it's time to take action. You can change the company you keep. Misery loves company, and it wants you on its team. Hang out with people who have poor attitudes, and they'll destroy yours. Make sure the people you are hanging out with are building your attitude up rather than tearing it down. You can change your self-talk. There's a little voice inside of you, and it jabbers away 24/7. Self-talk, what you say to yourself internally, manifests itself in your outward attitude and actions. Stop and listen to what you are telling yourself. If you are drowning in self-pity, blaming the world for your problems, and telling yourself what you can't do, then it's time to change your language, because you cannot afford the luxury of a negative thought. You can change your input. What you put into your ears and your eyes is usually what comes out of your mouth. If you are reading, watching, or listening to negative things, it will impact your attitude. Take a break from the news. Turn off talk radio. Start feeding positive messages into your brain, and your attitude will gain altitude. You can change your focus. Yes, you lost. You had a setback. You failed. When confronted with failure, some people waste all their energy dwelling on it. They play the tape over and over again in their head. Change your view. Embrace the gift of failure. Leverage that hurt to become stronger and more agile. Harness the energy you are wasting playing the defeat tape and use it to drive you towards your next goal. You are not defined by what happens to you, but rather how you deal with what happens to you. Each time you face adversity or when things don't go your way, you have a choice. You can either choose to whine and complain or choose to learn and grow. And be grateful. Gratitude is the cornerstone of a positive attitude, the spark that ignites self-motivation, and one of the true keys to happiness. It is an appreciation for what you have, what you've been given, your opportunities, lessons learned through failure and adversity, and the help that others have given you along the way. Elite salespeople are thankful to have a career that allows them to out-earn almost everyone else around them. Grateful for the roadblocks and challenges that help them learn and make them stronger. Grateful for the customers and prospects that generate their incomes. Grateful for the companies that pay their commission checks. Grateful for bad bosses who help them learn what not to do, and the great bosses who inspire them to stretch and become more. The good news is you can deliberately cultivate gratitude and the positive attitude that comes from it by reminding yourself to be thankful. When you are on top, attack yourself. Maybe you just crossed the finish line first, raised your hands in the air, pumped your fist, and celebrated. Maybe you've just come off of a big year, quarter, or month. You've been given accolades, a trophy, a President's Club trip, the admiration of your peers, or a huge commission check. You may wonder, how much better can I get? While you are cashing that big commission check, relaxing on the beach, or walking on stage at your national sales meeting to pick up your trophy, remember that just because you are a winner today does not guarantee that you will be a winner tomorrow. When you have worked this hard, singularly focused on one thing, it is natural to believe that you have reached an apex, a peak, or a mountaintop. Now that you are sitting on the top of that mountain, you feel that you can rest, take in the view, and be content. You can breathe a sigh of relief and allow yourself to believe, for the first time in a long time, that it is all downhill from here. Well, take a moment.